Hi, this is Adam Carolla. I want to thank you for supporting this podcast on the Carolla Digital Network. Everyone here at Carolla Digital is very proud of the shows that we put out every week and are excited about the future of our network. However, a patent troll is threatening that future by suing us. We need to fight back and beat the troll down. If we go down, all the other shows on the other networks you've grown to love are going to go down next. Visit fundanything.com/patent troll to donate and find out other ways that you can help beat the patent trolls. Thank you and mahalo.
This is Carolla Digital.
Sisters, welcome to Penn Sunday School, starring Penn Jillette. My name is Michael Goodell, and on today's show, live in Vintage Nudes, we've got our cephalopod expert. Rich Ross is here to tell us scary fish stories. We've got a guy to help you with your songwriting career, Jay Frank. We hung with Lawrence Krauss and Richard Dawkins. Penn performed a wedding. It's a big week. Here he is, preaching love, Mr. Penn Jillette.
Yeah, this is Penn Jillette preaching love, and I don't even know, this could be one of those problems where we get so much to talk about. We got 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag, and we just got so much to do that I'm afraid that we're not going to get to, like, any of it. You know how that kind of happens?
Let's just stop now.
All
right, thanks for listening, everybody.
That was, yeah. But I got to cover this a little bit, you know, because... We did a show for the can with Richard Dawkins.
Yes, we did.
Which was a great show. When we're going to put that one on, make sure you listen because it's pretty boss. I have a friend. My high school girlfriend is a geneticist. And she has a lot of differences of opinion with Richard Dawkins. So I sent her the show. She disagrees with a lot of it. But it's all this, you know, it's all the stuff of the actual science, which, you know, Dawkins does mostly the atheist talking now,
yeah.
You know. So she has little details like exactly what
he's
is this.
He's not in the lab anymore.
What is that? So we talked to Richard Dawkins, and then we did a Q&A, which Vegas really showed up.
Yeah,
you know,
a ton of people.
I thought that Richard Dawkins and Lawrence Krauss playing Vegas, we'd have like nobody show up. And it was over 1,000 people showing up and paying cool cash to see Richard Dawkins and Lawrence Krauss. It was really, really great. And I only flipped Lawrence Krauss the finger once on stage, which is very good for me.
Mm-hmm.
And
that was below the Vegas line had for the chat.
Yeah, yeah.
Your 2.5 was the amount of fingers.
Yeah. One double knuckler, one of those. Those ones. The ones where you hate someone so much, you don't even bother really flipping the finger. You just barely curl your fingers down. It's like, you know. You know how much I hate you. I don't have to do this.
That's my TSA fingers.
Yeah.
When I go through the TSA machine.
Yeah.
I do the raised middle fingers over the head.
Yeah, always. I think everybody does. They probably think that's part of the protocol. Because everyone I know, when they say raise your hands over your head, touches the two middle fingers together like that. We all do that. And so that's a pretty huge thrill to be to interview Dawkins for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Then be on stage for a Q&A with Dawkins and Lawrence Krauss. And yet... we then went to the Denny's afterwards, and I had moons over my hammy.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a banner night, one of the best nights of my life. And then as I get in the car, my wife had a different car, so I get in the car alone, get the old electric Leaf, because, you know, we're saving the planet by driving one car plus a Leaf with one person at each to the exact same destinations. And because driving that Leaf, you know, you save the planet. So I get in, and I get a phone call from Goodell. Okay? This is what, 1 a.m. or something?
Yeah, it's pretty late.
Get a phone call from Goodell, and it's Goodell is doing like a scene from Close Encounters. He's going like, the sun came out last night. It sang to me. He's going like, look at the Luxor light. Look at the Luxor light. Look, look, there's something in the Luxor light. And I'm driving, you know, and I'm driving toward the Luxor, but of course, I'm so lost all the time.
Right.
I don't really know what direction to look for like a very long time. like 10 minutes before I see the biggest light on planet Earth that I'm 3 miles from. That takes 10 minutes, okay? So you just imagine how I would do, you know, following the North Star. You know?
People in San Francisco can see the Luxor light now in the daytime. Right. I mean, it's so bright.
If I was one of the wise men, Jesus would have never been found in that manger. That's all I'm telling you.
No gifts for that little fucker.
No. You're going to go frankincense and Merlith. You will be Merlith.
Merlith.
You'll be the Merlith baby.
So you rolled down your window and said, has anyone seen a giant black pyramid with a light shining up to the sky?
That they can see from space. You know, when you're flying around, you know, you're in the shuttle, it's like you see Luxor like Great Wall. Luxor like Great Wall. Luxor like Great Wall. Luxor like Great Wall. That's what the orbits are like. Luxor like Great Wall. Luxor like Great Wall. So I finally see it, and it is amazing. About the same distance above the Luxor as the Luxor is high.
Okay, so another 1,000 feet maybe. Not that much, not much. Must be 400, right?
I explained it perfectly.
Okay.
Good.
Let's try to get a number in there.
About 400 feet. You want to get a number in there. 400 feet above there. In the light of the Luxor, you know, a big pyramid with a light coming on the top, there are these white figures. Just swooshing in and big, you know? And then you tell people about it and they go, moths. And you go, fuck you and your moths. It was not moths. It was not bats. It was, Rich Ross said it was angels.
Rich Ross says angels, yes.
Yeah. But they were big. And you're saying seagulls.
I think seagulls.
And the inner tube says owls.
Yeah.
It says that there's a whole ecosystem built above this thing and that the moths come, and then the bats came and ate the moths, and then the owls came and ate the bats, which wiggled and jiggled and tickled inside her. But they build a the video isn't up. It's only I don't have the video up there, Rich. I only have it on my phone. But maybe we'll put it up on the Penn Sunday School
page. What were you
playing
it off of, Rich?
Rich has it up on
I have it up on my Facebook page.
But not my video.
No, your video's funnier. Because you can hear me in the background going, angels!
My video is screaming about angels. Because we drove over to the Luxor and got out. And somebody says, you know, there's a lot of people walking by. And one of them said, it's the doves that Chris Angel produces fly up into the light after the... Fuck you, die!
I was going to say it was the ghosts of every person who's disappointed at Chris Angel's show that they killed themselves.
Just float.
That's the right size.
But it's trillions of people, not people, winged creatures, which incidentally is a movie by Kate Beckinsale, winged creatures flowing through here. You know, you think seagulls.
I think seagulls.
Rich thinks angels. The inner tube thinks owls. And then I went back the next night, and you went back the night after.
Yeah.
They weren't there. Nothing there. Just not there. So it's something that happens once in a while, and it is something.
That's why I don't think it's owls. Well, the owls would be there every night.
Why would seagulls not be there? Are seagulls more capricious?
They're more capricious, yeah. And they're also, they travel in flocks, and owls don't generally travel in flocks.
Well, there was that band from Australia called Flock of Owls.
Yeah. Not as successful as Flock of
Seagulls. But good hair.
Even better hair.
I think it's a transitional species, people moving up to a higher level. And I think it probably had something to do with the different food that was there at the time. You know, maybe we had a bloom of moths.
We did have a lot of moths there. Remember, there were large moths flying by us regularly.
Yeah, there were a lot of large moths. Yeah. Clarice.
The silence of the moths.
It was something. It was really something. It was, and we'll put up. You want to go see this? I haven't got it ready. Unless you want to hand this to Ready Rich, and maybe he can play the audio. Let me see if I can get this open for him, and then you can hand it out to him. Here it is. Hand this to Ready Rich.
Just hold on the mic. Just hold on the mic. All right.
Just hold on to the mic.
Emily, this is insane. I'm at the Luxor because Godot pointed out that there are birds flying into the light of the Luxor, like a gajillion, billion, zillion of them.
Angels.
And they're giant. They're like angels or birds. Look at that. Look at that. Look at that. What could that be? That's the Luxor. There's Godot. And look at that. Look at that. Look at that. Jesus Christ.
There are no atheists at the base of the Luxor, but there are angels showing up. Look at that.
You are dangerously close to the double rainbow.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. I was dangerously close to the rainbow.
A regular Richard Attenborough there. That's just fantastic.
Look at that. It's really something. Yeah. Somebody listening to our podcast over the next week will know more about this, don't you think? You don't think so?
No.
Not
no
some,
one will. No, we've done some research. We can't find anything else on
it. Yeah, but we have people that – don't we have – what is a bird expert called? An aviation?
No. Aviation expert,
or
yeah.
Is Rich just like a snob? Like aquatic people know more about their deal than
that goes without saying. But, and we know about everything having to do with any kind of animal at all. It seems like there's just nothing out there about this because people don't want to learn about the thousands of bats that are pooping over Las Vegas constantly. It seems like that might
well,
be
that's it. Guano. Isn't Guano powerful? Actually, he's the guitar player for Von the Femmes.
It's Richie.
Or he's the lead singer for U2.
For Guano.
He's one or the other.
But I think Guano is great, but falling on top of hotels, I don't know how useful that is. Guano on top of a hotel.
Guano on top of Guano a hotel, which is one of the first abstract expressionist paintings.
Are you? I think you should pitch a show called "Look at That," where you go around and go, "Look at that!
Look at that!"
That's right.
Well, it's
we're here in the Galapagos Islands.
Look at that!
There's the beautiful marine iguana.
Look at that!
What could it be? What could it be? It's a marine iguana. What could it be?
Look at that! We will have that. Go to PennSundaySchool.com. And you will have video of angels over the Luxor in Vegas. You need to look at that, I think. Don't you think?
I think so.
People need to see what I saw. Maybe I can put the video up on Twitter, too. Can I? Can you put a video up on Twitter? Yeah, sure.
What are you looking at me for?
I thought maybe you would or something. Anyway, Jay Frank is here in the hizzy, as we say. I want to talk to him because you're going to split and do some big fancy panel at NAB.
Muckety-muck stuff, yeah.
What are they asking you about at NAB?
They're asking me about streaming music and does it actually make money for musicians?
Which it doesn't, right?
It does.
It does. Tell us about that.
Well,
get like a million plays and you get like enough to buy a gas station oatmeal.
A little bit more than that. But okay. The biggest thing is that right now I think streaming music is becoming the great democratizer. Basically, if you're great, you're going to make more money than you ever have before. But if you suck, you'll make nothing.
Uh-huh.
And that's pretty much how it gets. And the problem is that the people who have been either mediocre or less are now complaining because they make less money.
Uh-huh. But isn't it for the same number of people? See, here's what I would like. In my utopia, we pay for everything on the inner tube right away.
Mm-hmm.
And, every web page you visit, every time you go to, Enema Nurses, or every time you go to World War II Bombers, just for my two most recent searches. whenever you go to that, you pay like a hundredth of a penny to visit that site. Every time you play Sketches of Spain by Miles Davis, you pay a half a cent.
Right.
Every time you play it, no matter how many times you've played it, you don't ever own music. That was a nutty thing.
And that's what's happening.
But the situation is I had a subscription to Spotify, had a subscription to Mog. Had a subscription to Mog, which I stopped because if I put it on pause, then go out and play bass, and then come back to change into my suit to do the Penn & Teller show,
yeah,
it skips to the next song.
No, that's not good.
That annoys me. So I got rid of them, punished them. I also got up on Beats,
yep,
right?
That's actually the former Mog.
It was? Really?
Yeah, Beats bought Mog, and then they fixed it up and made it nicer. And
oh, really?
And, yeah.
And the thing I don't like about Mog is there's not a really good app for the computer. It's only on the
and that's one of the things that Beats rectified in that.
Oh, they have? There is,
yeah,
one now?
Yeah, the Beats. Well, Mog is gone. It's now Beats, and Beats has made things about putting things into podcasts and actually focusing on podcasts. And you can actually make your own playlist that has something. You know, it says something like, you know, I'm sitting doing a podcast on a Sunday afternoon in Vegas while talking about aliens, and it'll give you a podcast about that.
Okay, but I know that. But what I'm saying is they don't have a desktop.
No, they don't.
Yet.
They do not.
And I use it on the desktop an awful lot, so I'm still on Spotify. Now, what have you got?
Well, what I've got is basically I started up a new model record company, which is called DigSyn, which is short for Digital Single. And what I've tried to do is basically...
But DigSyn is really good, too.
It is. It is. It is fun.
You probably didn't notice this, but the word dig means to enjoy and sin. So it's,
people don't
instantly think digital, do they? They think dig.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite quote by, forgot who it was, but one jazz musician, the one who first... coined the term cool or first started using it a lot, whose name
it's
will
not
come
Slim
to me.
Gaylor?
No.
Slim is groovy, I guess.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, the Luxor is 350 feet tall.
Okay, good.
Hey, pretty good. So, I said four.
Very close. And he was once a saxophone player sitting in a club watching another saxophone player play. And a person came up to him and said, I'm a big fan. Could I have your autograph? And he turned to him and said, I don't dig being dug while I'm digging. Can't beat that, can you? I don't dig being dug while I'm digging.
Nope.
So DigSyn, which I've just pointed out to you, has another meaning besides digital sin.
Digital single, yeah.
Yeah, single.
Digital Sin would probably be a different company.
Yeah.
But yeah, we...
And a great band name.
But we basically decided, can we build a record company from the ground up based on how people are consuming music? So we focused on a business model that is about actually getting more people into listening to streaming music. But we also give away all of our music. Anybody can go to our site, digsyn.com, and just give us their email address, and we'll give you any one of the songs we release for free.
Uh-huh. And how do you make money?
We make money basically because if the song is popular, then we make money. The giving away singles is actually kind of a red herring, because really the difference between whether or not anything in the entertainment space, whether it's music, movies, art, the difference between whether it makes money or not is how popular does it get. So the more visibility it gets, the more that people go to the natural channels they have.
If they get all the music from you free all the time, then you don't ever make money. Otherwise, you get the situation of how do we do it volume.
Well, the answer is that...
Advertising?
Well, a little bit, but it's very inconsequential. What happens is that those people who listen to it, if they like the song, then they'll listen to it on their Spotify subscription. We'll make a little there.
Oh, you own the record label.
Yeah, exactly.
So you make it on the Spotify.
Right.
And what is the money for Spotify?
I mean, the money is roughly speaking about half a cent per play, roughly, but it varies a little bit.
Really? It's that high?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not that terrible.
No, it's not terrible. I mean, it's again, if it sucks and you get played 20 times a month, you know, you can't feed the parking meter. But on the other hand, if you're really popular,
you can just for like 4 minutes.
Right. Well, that's true. But if
in Arizona, not San Francisco.
No, San Francisco
like a minute.
But what ends up happening is if people love it, then it gets played over and over, and then it basically becomes just residual checks.
So you're doing essentially marketing for your Spotify play.
We're marketing for everything. We're marketing for Spotify. We're marketing to create popularity so radio might play it. We're marketing so that maybe the song becomes popular enough somebody wants to use it in a movie or an ad campaign. Mm-hmm. And then it just keeps growing and growing.
And what's your biggest song so far?
We have a band called Bronze Radio Return, and they have a song called Further On Right Now. That's
Further On Right Now? Or no. They have a song called Further On
Right Now. Yes.
Okay.
Song is called Further On, and you know, it's been streamed 500,000
Further
times.
Further On Right Now is a better name for a song.
They didn't include that in the lyrics, so we just focused on Further On. but what we
had, a sequel.
That'll be, yeah, exactly. But the song's been used in several commercials, and it's sold 30,000 downloads, and it's helped them sell about 10,000 albums, and just keeps growing and growing.
Now, do you believe, I guess like Apple believes, that the iTunes model is just going away? Because they've already moved over to radio.
It's going away. It's gonna go away slowly, but where I think we're actually going to be in about 5 years is just a complete hybrid of everything. Some people will still buy physical discs. Some people will buy digital
files.
No
one's going to buy physical discs.
Oh, absolutely.
Who's buying physical discs?
A lot of people buy physical discs. I mean, they might buy them for different reasons now. For example, a lot of...
Coasters?
Like, well, you get a lot of
weapons.
People. I've talked to New Orleans musicians, and they'll go and they'll still sell, you know, 100-200 copies a night of their CDs, specifically because people want to have it as a souvenir. Same thing happens when people go to concerts. They want to actually have a souvenir of the concert and actually hold something tangible and physical that has music.
And they can also get it signed.
And they can also get it signed. So there's going to be different reasons, and it's certainly going to diminish. But, you know, the same thing goes to the resurrection of vinyl. People are buying more and more vinyl now because there's an artifact.
I just got a bunch of Sun Ra. vinyl that's being released. Because, you know, you can't buy enough Sun Ra. And yep. I mean you physically can't buy enough Sun Ra.
I don't think you could physically listen to all Sun Ra in your lifetime.
There's like 300 or 400 documented Sun Ra records.
Because they never put out a record with the same tracks.
Well,
they would do
different things. Sun Ra had a deal with a vinyl pressing plant. So they would press 500 records for him anytime with just a white cover. So what he would do was he would give them tapes and say, turn this into vinyl. They would turn it into vinyl, and then he would scrawl in magic marker a title across it and then have the band color on the bus. And then he would sell those records, hand-colored by the band with his name and magic marker. He would sell those at the shows. And so he sometimes would use the same title for two different records, and he would sometimes use the same records with different titles. And some of the songs he named 3 or 4 times different things, and some of the same titles he used for different songs. So any sort of discography on Sun Ra is done by a very frustrated person.
Do you own some of those albums?
What's that?
Do you own some of
them? I own none of the actual hand-colored ones.
Oh, that seems fantastic. That's a real
collectible. Every once in a while, I go on eBay and try to find one at a reasonable price. But for those of you looking for a present for Ben Gillette, a hand-colored Sun Ra record would get you.
Do you have any complaints about the show? Write them on the back of a hand-drawn Sun Ra album and send it in.
You know how I got my Beatle Butcher cover? I have, you know, the Beatles, I guess everybody knows this, but I'm going to say capsulize anyways. When Yesterday and Today came out, the Beatles record that exists in the USA but not in England, because they took tracks from every track album that came over, pulled them back, and then held them out enough to make another record, which was going to be called Yesterday and Today. But the Beatles, and there's some argument about this, whether they did this as a social statement or just as a weird art thing, decided when they did the cover pose, they would be in butcher outfits covered with meat and blood, butchering dolls with hacks, you know, with cleavers. And it was Capitol Records, right? Is what they were?
Yeah.
Capitol Records saw the cover. It was the Beatles' choice. Okay. And put out about 1,000 of the Beatle Butcher covers. Just sold them. They went out to stores. And as soon as they went to stores, this is the Beatles, the Fab Mop Tops, chopping up baby dolls. We hate this.
In the height of the boy band part of the Beatles.
Exactly. So they took them back, and they slapped the regular Yesterday and Today cover over it, okay? And so there were some that came out that were just the Beatle Butcher covers. Then there were a bunch that came out that were the Yesterday and Today cover over the Beatle Butcher cover. And a lot of those were peeled off. So kids would take them and steam them to see the Beatle Butcher cover under it. And then some of them came out and were not unpeeled. And you could hold up the light and see a little bit of Ringo's black turtleneck. Or maybe it's a Dickie. How would I know? But you see this black triangle.
You have a skill at that.
Yeah. And some and I think like 2 in the world still have the shrink wrap and the price, which means someone bought the record, didn't take off the shrink wrap, didn't take off the Yesterday and Today cover, but knew that it was a Butcher cover. So in about 1984, we were playing L.A., small clubs, and I did an interview with an L.A. paper, and they said, what would it cost to find out how all the tricks in the show were done? If I wanted to find out how all the tricks in the show were done, what would I have to pay you? And I said, well, you know, that's not the way I think. They said, give us a price. What would it be to find out how all the tricks that Penn and Teller have ever done are done? And I said, what I want is an unpeeled, sealed Beatle Butcher cover. If I get an unpeeled, sealed Beatle Butcher cover, whoever gives that to me, I will tell you how every trick in the Penn and Teller show is done. And I said that in an interview. And 3 weeks later, a beautiful, pristine Beatle Butcher cover in the sealed wrap showed up backstage in a nice box, and I opened it up, and I went, holy shit, this is amazing. And there was a note that said, now shut the fuck up, love, Teller.
Ha, 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 ha,
And at the time, it was a breathtaking amount of money. Actually, no, it was when I told him this whole story wrong. It must have been one of the first interviews we did because it was like the 70s. Because it was before John Lennon was shot. And at that time, it was the most incredible amount of money anyone could ever pay for a piece of vinyl. I think Teller paid like $200 or $300 for it. And then John Lennon gets shot, and Teller said, well, that Beetle Butcher cover is worth a little more now.
You can't have
but
that back.
Now they're worth more than $200 or $300.
Well, did you hear what Wu-Tang Clan did this past week? So Wu-Tang Clan decided that their brand new record, they were going to do one physical copy, not release it digitally, and basically whoever is the highest bidder will be the only person on earth to get the new Wu-Tang Clan album. And then from that point forward, they could do it what they want. They could distribute it everywhere. They could just keep it private.
What a great idea. Yeah. Why didn't I see this? I read stuff.
Yeah, this was probably about a week ago.
And it should have been a huge story.
It was a pretty big story.
Okay, yeah. I missed it.
Yeah, and I think somebody is right now bid about $5 million, which is about where it's at. And they've, and it's in a nice, really nice box. And
sure,
like,
a nice
custom
box.
Custom house, the whole thing.
Comes in as high-end as they could. Sure. But they basically said that it's on that person. That, like, music always gets out. Music always gets put in places and disseminate for free. So why not at least just make money on one thing? And then if that person wants to give it away for free, then go for it.
Yeah.
Or if they want to try to find a way to monetize it, no, that's also good.
Yeah.
It's at $5 million now.
That's what I heard, is at $5 million.
Oh man, how are they doing the bidding? Is it through some organized site?
I haven't actually looked. So I think what they're doing is just, private bidding through management, most likely.
Sure.
Why give somebody 10% of $5 million, right?
That's a big question, man. There are reasons. There are reasons.
If I could be the guy making the 10%, I could give you a ton of reasons.
Wait a minute. That's where I got those reasons. From the guy making 10% of my money. That's where I got those reasons. All those really good. What a great idea. Yeah. Do you know anything more about that? I'm not done talking about it.
I have
nothing else to say.
I haven't read anything recently. Yeah, I haven't seen anything recently other than that they actually have that bidder with $5 million.
And one physical copy.
As of April 3rd, someone has bid $5 million for the Secret Album.
Yes. Is it just called the Secret Album?
So far. Hold on. Hold, please.
Yeah.
And
wow, it is a nice box.
I wasn't lying about the box.
No, the box was good.
And is it
they
vinyl?
Spent the last 6 years recording a secret album called The Wu, Once Upon a Time in Shaolin. They plan on manufacturing just one copy of the album, which will be auctioned off.
What
and apparently
a great
it's
idea.
In like some big secret vault somewhere, and I mean, it probably isn't just somebody's house in their basement, but
no, man, they're really into all that, like that the whole like Asian kung fu thing. They're really into it, so
yeah,
they can make it kind of parallel any kind of Shogun plot point. They'll do it.
That's probably true.
Like the album's probably across the floor that if you creak, you're not allowed to grab it yet. Like,
I don't,
you have to like, find a way to cross.
I
properly.
Don't remember the old episode of Kung Fu of the Curse of the Holy Album where they had to go through the jungles
gotta,
and fight ninja warriors to get a
karate
piece of
chop like through like 10 paper walls to like get into this.
They're not walls of their paper.
That's true.
It's just not.
You have to go through paper.
You have to go through paper.
Yeah.
Go through the first wedding anniversary. And so is it vinyl or is it digital?
If my memory is correct, there's a vinyl copy, digital, hard drive with all the files.
The album.
That's not one copy.
Yeah.
That's more than one.
31 track album, housed inside an engraved silver and nickel box crafted by a British artist. Mm-hmm. Doesn't tell us. I guess looks like it must be vinyl. There's not really.
Whose idea was that?
It's even better when you open the case. The light shines and you turn to stone, and then they can sell the album again and make another $5 million.
Everyone who listens to
until you are pure, until you are pure, you'll be turned to stone.
Only the purest of heart.
Only the real owner will survive.
Only he who is without sin can listen to the new record. Boy, that's a great idea. Boy, yeah. That's a great – and it really is nothing other than selling your song to a record company. There's no difference whatsoever, really.
Financially, they're probably going to make more this way.
Yeah. Unless, of course, the person who buys it is a real performance artist and it doesn't get out.
Closes it up. Yeah.
Yeah. And I have a friend who will remain nameless, but who is wealthy, stupid wealthy, wicked stupid wealthy, wicked stupid crazy wealthy. And he's kind of a jazz nut, and I'm kind of a jazz nut. We were out having a dinner at a super, super wealthy restaurant, and he was picking up the check. Yeah. And we were talking jazz. And I said, he has a huge jazz collection. And I said, isn't it amazing that all this jazz stuff that used to be so hard to get, that you used to have to wait for and everything, is now available on Spotify? I mean, the long tail. You can find it anywhere. YouTube videos. You can find stuff that Jonesy waited for and looked for in record stores for 3 years. Now a complete neophyte to jazz can just find that in the day. If you go, oh, I really like Charlie Parker, I want to listen to all the Charlie Parker, you can. You know, it would be a lifetime of record collecting is now just whimsical. You just, and I was talking about how great that was. We all had all the music there. And he said this sentence, and I believe he was not joking. I believe he meant it. He said, when I have something, it's not enough for me to have it. I want other people not to have it. I don't like that my jazz collection is no longer, everybody can listen to it now. And that is a point of view that some people have. So I want to find out who bid.
Well, whoever it was, let's see. No more information on that part. But they plan to take the album on tour. And so you'll pay $30 to $50 to go in through heavy security and sit and put on headphones and listen to the album.
One by one?
I think on Moss, but you have to do it through headphones because they'd want to make sure nobody can, you know, just put a microphone.
Yeah, except they have the microphones in people's heads now.
That 31 tracks. Well, 31 tracks, $50 at a time. You sit there and listen to all 31 tracks.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like a high turnover of money making.
Should buy one of those splitters. You could double the money like right off the bat.
How much is it to listen? Does it say
$30 to $50 range? Those are the tickets to sit down and listen to it.
Or you could copy the album and sell it. Yeah, to everybody who wants it and make money that way.
Yeah, oh no, that's another business model.
Yeah.
You can play it for us, and then we can hum it.
But you know, I
not a good business
essentially,
model.
The big trick is actually it's 31 John Cage covers. So
yeah. Well, every cut is 4:33.
Right.
But this is step one in a group of musicians really trying to experiment with the value of their music again.
Yeah.
So like
this
is just the first of what there's going to be other things like this that are going to be super.
Well, you know what we're finally getting around to is live performance. You know, what turns out is that the people that were prescient on this whole music thing were the Grateful Dead. And which is heartbreaking. But the Grateful Dead gave all their music away.
Yeah.
Anyone who could bootleg, had a table for it and everything, and then made their money off the live shows. And, you know, Penn & Teller are doing well. And we don't own, you know, people say, you know, a person came up to us actually and said after the show, gave each Teller and I $100 in cash. And said, this is for all the television stuff we've stolen from you guys. They said we wanted to pay for it, but we couldn't, so here it is. You can't get Invisible Thread. You can't get this. You can't. And, of course, I said thank you and took the money.
Yeah.
But the truth of the matter is when you watch bullshit on YouTube, they are not in any way taking it from us. We sold our work to Showtime.
Right.
So it really is their work. And
you're going to have a guy from Showtime hit you up for $100.
Sure. No, only 90. But for us in the business model, it's wonderful the more this Penn & Teller stuff gets out there. Doesn't mean it's morally right. It's still morally wrong to take stuff that belongs to Showtime and show it out there. But in pragmatic terms, that gets people interested in Penn & Teller. They come and buy tickets. And the one thing you can't get away from is the live performance.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can electronically copy a live performance. You can bootleg audio from a live performance. You can bootleg video from a live performance. But you cannot bootleg magic. There's no way you can experience something happening in real time in the theater. So we're in very good shape there. But I mean, even people like Springsteen give out a record now to make the money live. So it's now impossible. Is there any way that the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's, made now makes money?
Absolutely. And not because, you know, something like Sgt. Pepper is something that you want to listen to over and over every month for 20 years. And what ends up happening is that rather than getting $10 at one point on the front end, you'll probably end up getting $20 in little dribs and drabs over 20 years.
So probably for the way the rock stars budget money, that's probably healthier.
If they have good, if they have good business manager. But, you know, going back
instead
to
a Lamborghini and 40 pounds of Coke, you just have time to pay your rent over all those
years.
Yeah,
it's going to work better. A lot of musicians are going to have happier lives.
You get a Fiat and Jack Daniels. But you get it every month.
Yeah. Yeah. Another Fiat.
Yeah.
This one's got power windows.
So what are you talking about in at the NAB thing?
So I'm actually talking about this very subject. I'm talking about how it is that musicians can make money at and how they
And you want a panel?
But yeah, I'm on a panel about it with some experts from BMI and Sound Exchange and a bunch of other
Who?
Different organizations. Sound Exchange?
No. EMI. Who? Yeah, oh, to yeah. The Sex Pistols song.
BMI, not
BMI.
EMI,
okay.
Not
EMI. And ASCAP.
Although it's funny, like, there was the I know you have the agenda, but the other weird thing today was that Johnny Rotten is going to be playing King Herod in Jesus Christ
yes,
Superstar.
Yes, I saw that, yeah.
It blew my mind. I was like, I have to see that.
Well, he is one of the most just fabulous, charismatic performers.
Yeah.
I mean, seeing the Sex Pistols at any stage in their career is amazing. He's a wonderful, wonderful performer. You know, Teller always thought that Johnny should do Shakespeare. He always thought that his Richard III, Johnny Rotten would be just amazing, and that he should be cast in that. They've cast him in like one or two movies, but not in deep, rich roles, because he's such an incredible performer.
Well, he's also seems like the kind of guy who's so eccentric. He wanted to, like, he did the UK's Big Brother TV show.
Yeah.
You know? So he'd rather do those kind of weird things rather than maybe Richard III, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. Tell her, by the way, I just saw
an eccentric celebrity who would rather do reality shows than Shakespeare.
Creepy.
What's it like to be around that?
Yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy, nutty. Teller, what I did Friday night was I went to see Teller's Tempest. Have you seen it yet, man?
I'm going next Sunday.
Oh, you know, first of all, I always want to like stuff that
right.
Teller does on his own, and I don't always, you know. As a matter of fact, I don't always. decided to change the fact at the last minute there. But one of the reasons that we do solo stuff is because the stuff we do together has to be vetted by both of us. And we have interests that the other one doesn't share. I mean, Teller's nothing to do with my band. Teller's nothing to do with certain movies I do and so on. We overlap on like Tim's Vermeer. We overlap, of course, on the Penn & Teller show and bullshit. But the Aristocrats and those things that are my own. And Teller was fine with them, but they didn't grab him. Or they would have been Penn & Teller projects. Same thing with the stuff Teller does. And Teller has a huge interest in Shakespeare. And I know that I should, because everybody that I talk to, you know, I mean, Christopher Hitchens, you know, the people I really respect or respected, Salman Rushdie, they will always say Shakespeare, Burns, Dylan. You know, always, you know, Robert Burns, Shakespeare, Dylan, boom, boom, boom. And I only know the Dylan stuff and love the Dylan stuff. So I try to read Shakespeare and get into it, but it's very difficult for me. And, you know, The Tempest, which is also Tempest, is Dylan's last album. The Tempest is Shakespeare's last play. And they asked Dylan in a Rolling Stone interview. They said to him, Shakespeare's last play was The Tempest. And your last record is same name, and you're getting toward the end of your career. Is there some sort of comment? And Bob's answer? No, that was The Tempest. I'm Tempest. Two different titles. he's quite mad, you know. I always have to throw in my James Bond after I've done my my Dylan impersonation. And the idea of The Tempest is filled with magic. And Prospero is seen as a magician, you know. And it's not grafted on. As a matter of fact, on this very show is when Teller first talked about wanting to do The Tempest with all this magic in there, conceived as a touring magic show, kind of. And he's got a tent outside of the Smith Center here in Vegas. It's also going to Boston. So I don't know when that is. It's about 5 weeks or something it opens in Boston. And if you're in Boston, go see it there. And Tom Waits, it's all Tom Waits and Kathleen Brennan's music. And this wonderful fucking band, killer band, upright bass, accordion, these weird singing bowls, and all this specially manufactured percussion. There is real magic tricks that will fool the living shit out of you. Not like stage special effects, oh, isn't that nice, but tricks that will fool you. Like, how the fuck did they do that? That's what fooling means, in case you don't know. Look at that!
This week on...
Worst audience member at Tempest ever.
And then Palabolas, who we did a show with, we wrote a show with them that they still do. Palabolas does Caliban, you know, the monster, and they do it as two guys moving together with acrobatics. That's just so creepy and so great. And the whole show is wonderful, just wonderful. And I think you'll be hard pressed to find a better production of The Tempest. And I hope it eventually goes to Broadway and just kills with it, because it's so good. So good. Everyone in it is great. And the idea, I mean, Teller didn't really need to do anything but get the idea of Palabolas and Tom Waits and Shakespeare. Get those three working together, then take a ride, you know. But he also added in, all the magic stuff. And he worked with Johnny Thompson.
Yeah, and the magic
course.
Stuff's really beautiful. Really great.
Magic stuff is amazing, and the set is beautiful, and you're in a tent, and it's everything about it is pretty wonderful. I mean, and I think that I shouldn't even push it that much in Vegas. I believe it's sold out.
Yeah,
the entire run is sold out. So if you're in Vegas, and you want to see The Tempest, fuck you.
Go to Boston.
Go to Boston. Yeah, it'll be first in line. Be first in line in Boston. What is the name of the panel you're on?
I should know, but I don't know. I think it's basically
making money in the 21st century.
Something roughly media. About that. Yeah, something roughly
so
about that.
You wrote a book on songwriting.
Yes, I wrote a book on songwriting in the digital age called Future Hit DNA, which is also my Twitter handle.
Okay.
Oh, say it again.
Future Hit DNA.
Future Hit DNA.
Yeah.
And what are you writing about, selling a song or actually writing it?
Well, what I wrote about was how technology has always had a role in what types of songs get consumed in a mass media, popular music kind mm-hmm. of way. And so I used to run music programming at Yahoo Music. And what I saw, this was, you know, at this point about 10 years ago, that there was different patterns of the types of songs that were actually becoming popular. Most notably, introductions to songs were getting shorter and shorter and shorter. As people's attention spans change.
I don't believe people's attention spans change. You do?
What was that last part?
they've changed, but more importantly, as I kind of talk about in the book, people used to discover music on the radio, so they would discover music in the middle of the song. Now that all songs are on demand, everything is discovered at the beginning of the song.
I believe that's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Huge, huge difference. Not attention spans. I don't think attention spans, there's no way you could say that attention spans of humans could actually change in that short a period of time. Well, but that's a big change.
Well, attention spans probably not as accurate. But the distractions of the web is
sure.
actually there. So, you know,
no doubt about
you
it.
Go to listen to a song on Spotify, you're going to hear the song from the beginning while there's a lot of other songs to suggest to listen to.
Ready Rich just sent us a thing that what principle is that? You got to say it, Ready Rich. I won't remember it. Skip the first third of any video, you get all the point on it. That's kind of what you're talking about there.
Yeah, roughly speaking, yeah. I mean, just because and that's what's happening with popular music is that everybody is front loading stuff. I mean, right now, something about 30% of the most popular songs have zero intros whatsoever.
The vocal comes in rather than
vocal comes in. So what I did in the book was, as I was developing these theories, I actually went back into other technology roles throughout technology's influence, everything from piano roles. controls to the size of 78 records and found that technology always kind of helped dictate what types of songs were made and popular.
It has to.
Yeah. Well, I say that. You're recognizing that, but most musicians always kind of say it comes from the ether. And,
but also, Wadsworth's constant?
Wadsworth constant. Yeah. Wadsworth constant says first 30% of anything you can throw out.
Yeah.
Which I don't believe. But what's really interesting about this is Brian Eno did a lecture in the 70s that was handed around on cassettes. I don't even know where he gave it. I got a bootleg from it on cassette about the studio as a musical instrument, recording studio. Mm-hmm. And the example he uses is in Jailhouse Rock. Elvis hits the mic with his face. There's a kind of
little thud, yeah.
A little thud. He edited it so that was taken out of the song, which really bothered people.
Right.
They could sense and remember that wasn't Jailhouse Rock. And what I've always found fascinating is if you listen to Miles Davis and you listen to the live recordings, the count-offs that people give and the layout, those kinds of things, don't become intellectually part of the song. And yet, the Beatles, 1, 2, 3, 4, is absolutely part of it. You cannot take that away. The whoop has to be exactly the way it was done on the record. And there's a difference in the way jazz is listened to and the way rock and roll is listened to.
Absolutely.
And jazz was still bleeding out. Bebop was still bleeding out from live performances. There was just starting to be most of the stuff on vinyl, you know?
Well, one of the most interesting conversations I had was with a Nordic avant-garde classical artist named Olafur Arnalds.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking, and he had an experiment, this was a few years ago, where he had two different songs. One was his more popular song, one was a bit more mainstream written, but had a longer intro. And then he had another song that had no intro to it whatsoever, got right into the meat of it, but was way left of center, much more personal to him. And that song became more popular. And so he was actually seeing, even in avant-garde classical music, that the fact that people got into the meat of the song faster actually helped guide people to the more popular of his work.
But the point of that is, the really interesting point is the coming in at the beginning as opposed to coming in the middle. Because you come into the middle, you understand what the point of the song is.
That's right.
You get a hold of it. Then when the intro comes on, you're really interested in how it builds up to that.
Yeah.
The first time through, you want to get to it. Oh, man. That's something I'd never thought of.
Yeah.
So your point for songwriting is, I'm trying to think of the, how does Blurred Lines start? How does Happy start?
Blurred Lines starts with a little guitar riff, and then you have Pharrell saying, everybody get up.
Yeah.
You know, and just goes right into it from that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then hey, hey, hey.
Yeah, and then he goes the hey, 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 and there's a little like with a lot of.
And then when's the brunette come in? Really?
She's already been here the whole time.
Yeah, I forgot to count how many seconds till the first set of tits on that video.
Yeah. And Happy, which is the huge hit right now,
yeah.
Right?
Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 right in.
Yeah. So things like Layla wouldn't be for now.
Well, I think that if you have an established player like Clapton who expects mm-hmm. to hear guitars, then you actually have and Greg Allman, you have a winning guitar solo right at the beginning, like Layla has. That's the same equivalent,
of course.
But you know, AC/DC songs work, I think, in the same exact way. But mm-hmm. you can't just go and do just a standard like let's just go do a chunk of 16-bar riff that just drives you in. That won't
work. We're just we're doing a song for the director's cut that I wrote, we're recording, and we were just doing the arrangement, and we were saying, you know, let's give 16 bars up top for nothing. I mean, that is the way we think of it.
Yeah.
Let the groove get established, let's get into it before we do the song. And the song is written so that the turn on where it's coming is on the first chorus.
Right.
So it's written absolutely wrong by all your rules.
Well, and
maybe I should come in right on the vocal.
Well, and you go into that part about Spotify revenue and the need to get more and more people to play it in order to make money. You know, one of the things that a lot of studies have found is that when people hear vocals, they're less likely to actually tune out of a song because they feel guilty about interrupting a singer.
Sure.
So if you have that instrumental and you have 3 seconds of the instrumental and you say, oh, this is boring, you're more than likely to leave and then you don't get paid.
Now, when do you get paid? When the whole song is listened to?
You don't get paid when the whole song's listened to, but it depends on the service. It's roughly about 30, 60 seconds in.
Okay, and that's when you get paid.
Yeah.
So, but even if you get paid, And someone tunes out, they're apt to not go back to it. So
well, that's
it's
correct.
The same. It's the same. It's the same.
And they're apt to not talk about it, and they're not going to recommend it to friends because they have a negative connotation to the song.
Now, are you a songwriter?
No, not by trade.
Not at all. But no. I mean, do you write songs?
No, I help tweak songs, but I don't actually have
come
a
on. Great... Where's your journal?
No,
get it out.
I don't.
Get it out. Sing one for us.
I just write books.
Do you play an instrument?
Play piano, and I play woodwind instruments, saxophone, clarinet.
Okay.
Now that we're back on saxophone. Lester Young.
Lester Young,
the saxophonist,
of course. Young is the one who brought up Cool. Lester Young. I don't dig being dug while I'm digging.
There you go.
It's just the greatest sentence ever. I don't dig being dug while I'm digging. Yeah. what are the titles of the other books? This sounds good.
But Future Hit DNA is the book that's about songwriting. My second book was called Hack Your Hit, which is all just free and cheap ideas for musicians on things that they can do on the web to just get a little bit of a leg up, either to get more people listening to their music on Spotify, sharing it, getting more social network mentions, things like that. I have free chapters of each book on the website, futurehitdna.com.
Okay, well, that's great stuff. But what? Where do you think music will be in 10 years?
Where I think music will be is kind of where it's at right now. I mean, honestly, as much as I talk about this, my biggest concern is for artists, because people that like art like a lot of art. And in order for you to financially succeed in the digital world, you have to have a lot of consumption. And there's just not enough people in the world to consume the artistic music on a regular, repetitive basis. So, while I see that there's a lot of financial success for pop artists, I worry for people who do it for art simply because the patterns of the listener is so radically different. You know, you talk about the jazz musician. You love listening to a variety of jazz, so you're not going to listen to any one album.
And mostly Sun Ra, but Sun Ra ends up being a variety of jazz.
So by your standards, no one would listen to Hotel California.
No, it's not. No, I think a lot of people are going to listen to Hotel California. I'm just saying that.
No, if it came out today.
If it came out today, Hotel California would have a very difficult time gaining traction.
That is the best news I've heard. You know, a long time we talk about dystopian futures, but a future where Hotel California couldn't be a hit. Never mind eating lotus. Never mind living forever. Never mind world peace. A world where there's no Hotel California.
You know, if they had done...
I think my dad agrees. He's the one who texted that in to me just now. He's never texted me during a show ever.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Hotel California is, in so many ways, the definition of evil.
But going back to the dead, it's, you know, same thing. It, you know, just, you know, are you going to be able to get into something that's just all about a groove? And the only way would be is that, you know, they have to make it up on the live side, because recording-wise, it's just going to be difficult to introduce somebody to it.
Yeah, unless you're – but also the Grateful Dead became a – they were selling a lifestyle.
That's correct.
Like Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah.
Jimmy Buffett selling Hawaiian shirts and parrots and stuff.
And blenders.
And blenders. Blenders? Oh, yeah. Margaritas. Yeah. And I knew. I understood it. Just need a moment. Don't be that much disgust, squid boy. Fucking rip one of your arms off.
There is nothing about that lifestyle that appeals to you whatsoever. You might as well be talking about life on another planet. You talking about Jimmy Buffett and everything he does.
Yeah.
Cheeseburger in paradise. Cheeseburger in paradise. That's where you would leave your girl, though.
Yeah. Cheeseburgers I like. But I'll tell you, paradise has no allure to me at all. I don't want to live in paradise. I want to live in the future where there's no Hotel California.
Well, or in the past, had you adopted the Wu-Tang Clan plan, you could have purchased Hotel California
and kept it hidden from everybody.
Imagine that the person who buys the Wu-Tang Clan album burns it.
Yeah.
There's a piece of art.
Says, yeah. I've done you all a favor.
Yeah, I've listened to it. It's got to go.
I love every single bit of this. I love it as a there was a thing done. Who wrote Neuromancer?
Gibson.
Yeah. Gibson did a thing in the late 80s where they had a digital scroll being read out loud that would only exist once, and I was one of the readers on it. And so I did this thing where a written text appeared to me, and I could read it aloud, but it, you know, it had to be transcribed afterwards. And they were trying to do that piece of art that was audio that was altered, destroyed. And it was a really, really cool idea. But this idea is better. This idea is so pure and so wonderful and such a great way to I guess you could call it a commercial idea, but it's also a wonderful artistic idea to decide how that should be consumed. Have you got a secret you want to share with the class?
So, because I didn't know the reference. So, he went to high school with Nicole Bregman, who's Ron and Phyllis.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Did you really?
Yeah, we were in the same class.
Cool, cool, yeah. I love Nicole.
And then he's also friends with Gilbert Godfrey's wife.
Dara. Yeah. Oh, yeah, well, you would from the music business.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You would know her from the music business.
Yes.
I also want to take a moment, which is a little bit
he
off.
He also enjoys long walks on the beach.
Margaritas.
Pina coladas.
How long an intro does that have? The pina colada song.
Oh, God.
One How second too much?
How does that start?
Dun, 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 dun. Dun,
so would
dun,
that be hit in the future?
Dun, no.
Oh, yeah!
You're going to love the future.
I want to live the rest of my life in the future.
Penn, just for you, I'm going to make a list of songs from the 70s and 80s that would never be a hit today playlist, just for you to never listen to.
That's a good column. That's a good idea.
And then put it on vinyl and sell it to one person.
There we go.
And sell it to a person who's on fire.
Sweet.
Sell it to a Buddhist monk who wants Tibet back at the same time takes all this shitty music with him. Awesome. That would tie everything together. I want to just say, and I'm not going to go into this because I think everybody knows it, but I don't want it to go unsaid. Those of you who were backstage last night, you noticed that there were honey-made graham crackers backstage, and the rider for Penn and Teller now contains honey-made graham crackers. We will not play a venue. You know, our rider's pretty simple. Our rider says, if you can find some tea without caffeine and some carbonated water, we'd kind of like it. The rider for the magic is insane and impossible to follow. But the rider for the backstage green room is that we've added to that honey-made crackers, graham crackers, because they're good, but also, have you seen the answer they did to the hate mail?
No. About the ad with the gay couple.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah. Well, you seen where that went?
No.
You should go look at this. We'll link to it on PennSundaySchool.com because it's so great. They did an ad about wholesomeness, and they had a same-sex couple in the ad, and they got hate mail. And then what Honey Maid did with the hate mail that they got, and that 30-second or whatever it is, maybe it's a minute, ad that they did. It's the same thing as this Wu-Tang Clan thing, of doing beautiful artistic work in the commercial market. It is a great way to sell honey-made graham crackers, a great way to sell them, but also it's beautiful. And I mean, I love it when I cry my eyes out at a commercial. And this is essentially a commercial, even though I don't believe the product is mentioned, which makes it even hipper.
Yeah.
It's just great. I also loved the Strangers Kissing video that was an ad for clothing that everybody got so cynical about and so hateful about. I absolutely loved it and lost some friends over it, as a matter of fact. I got to talk about this for a second. I got a couple things to talk about, and then we'll get back. We got so much here. Like I said, this show, are we making do, Rich? Are we making do?
We're making better than do, Penn.
We're making better than do. We sure are. Modern technology is great. Smartphones, iPads, and other gadgets make it easy to do so many things. But why is it that our lives seem busier at the same time? Well, when it comes to getting the legal help you need, LegalZoom provides a great solution that works with your busy schedule. Let's face it, the legal system is complicated. There are better things you can do with your time. Thankfully, LegalZoom is there for you. So if you're thinking about starting a business, forming an LLC, or getting a trademark, will, or living trust, LegalZoom gets the job done right. You'll get the personal attention you need, and they'll help you take care of all the details. LegalZoom's been helping families and small business owners for 14 years, and they received an A+. Whoa!
A+. That's a good grade.
From the Better Business Bureau.
Go to LegalZoom.com today or call them at 800-773-0888. And don't forget to enter
Penn
in the referral box at at checkout for a special discount. LegalZoom provides legal help through independent attorneys and self-help services, but it's not a law firm.
No, it's not. But they're good. You did stuff.
They're great. Did my will a bunch of cool
you
stuff.
Can afford a Sleep Number bed. Now, that's an important thing. This bed, the Sleep Number bed that I have, my sleep number is 85.
Yeah.
My wife's sleep number is 65. The technology is so astonishing. Each little part of your body just held in a giant inflatable hand. It's
lifted
beautiful.
By angels.
It's beautiful. It's like it would be floating in the Luxor light. Here we talk about my sleep bed. Sleep number 85, partner 65. Maybe you considered owning a Sleep Number bed, but thought you couldn't afford one. But can you really afford another restless night's sleep? Introducing the all-new Sleep Number Classic Series with queen mattresses starting at only $699. Featuring their latest innovations, comfortably priced. The Sleep Number bed uses air to support and cushion your entire body. It's like floating over the Luxor with angels. Exclusive dual-layer technology makes it the perfect bed for couples. You can adjust each side to your ideal level of firmness, your Sleep Number setting. Do you make do with the Sleep Number bed?
No.
You make better than do. You sure do. It's a lot better than do. It contours to your neck, shoulders, back, and hips for more proper spinal alignment.
Yeah, hurry into a Sleep Number store where queen mattresses start at just $699. Right now, save $300 on an all-new C4 queen mattress set. No sleep better. Find your Sleep Number setting today at any of the 425 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Find one near you by calling 800-333-9117. The number again is 800-333-9117. Don't forget to tell them that
Penn
sent you.
When you think about the best time to go to the post office, you're probably guessing before work, after work, or during lunch. Wrong!
Wrong!
That's when it's the most crowded. Everyone's going at that time. The truth is, there's no convenient time to go to the post office. Never. There's never a good time to go to the post office. Because when you go, there's fewer people there. There's also fewer people waiting on you. That's why you need Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, access all the services of the post office right from your desk. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package using your computer and printer. Just hand it to your mail carrier. It is so easy. Unlike the post office, Stamps.com is open 24/7 with no lines, so you get your mailing and shipping done whenever it's convenient for you. We use Stamps.com at the big Penn and Teller offices. It's being used to send out the groovy gift packages from MakePennBad.com. Make Penn's Bed. That's another one. MakePennBad.com.
Not raising as much money, really, is it?
No. And we're sending stuff out for director's cut from there. We use Stamps.com all weekend. Wonderful, wonderful service. Right now, use my name.
Penn.
For this special offer, no risk trial, plus $110 bonus offer includes a digital scale and up to $55 free postage.
Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com. Before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in
Penn.
That's Stamps.com. Enter.
Penn. All of this stuff you can find out about by going to PennSundaySchool.com. I want to say very quickly that I did my first wedding yesterday.
Hey, you performed the wedding.
You met the couple. It's very actually nice. Renewal of vows for this couple.
All right.
But I have five real weddings coming up from the United Church of Bacon, people that come into Vegas, getting a room, seeing our show, and then I perform the service at a wedding chapel. It was me as one of the ministers, and there was also Elvis, and there was a priest, and a bunch of us are lined up. It looked like we were starting every joke in the world. A priest, a rabbi, Elvis, and Penn Jillette walk into a bar. That's what it was. We're all lined up, ready to walk into that bar. And the couple was great. You know, I'm doing these fulfillments, which are on paper a pain in the ass. I'm meeting all these people who gave money to make my movie. I'm meeting all these people from MakePennBad.com. And on paper, I look at it, and every week I go, oh, shit, I got to meet all these people. Then actually meeting them, they're all wonderful folks. You met, what, eight
of them last night? A bunch
of them last
night. They were all
like
great.
Eight of them last night, and they were all funny and interesting. And I love talking to them about – they all want to talk to me about the movie, and I talk to them about that. But I also love talking about stuff – you know, I learned stuff about them, you know.
Yeah, we had some, attorneys last night who answered some legal questions for us.
Some some IT people. Yeah, it was just great. So the whole director's cut thing is working out wonderfully, except for the making of the movie, which
the raising of the money, all that.
No, it's just going through a zillion iterations of trying to find the exact right cast.
Everything on the Making Sense end has lined up nicely. Then you enter Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly. And man, it's amazing. You ask, it takes an actor 10 minutes to look at a script and say, this isn't for me.
Right.
If she wants to do it, might take an hour. But to say no, you know, you can read a script. It's exactly what he was talking about, you know, no introductions.
Right.
You can read a script, get in pretty quickly, and know this is not for me. I'm out. And
I don't know what it's like to say no to that, but I imagine it would take that long.
They send us a script. We go, sure, when do you want us to show up?
I was going to say, it takes about 10 seconds for me to say yes so far in my showbiz career. Yeah.
I wear a gorilla suit and you fill it with mud? Yeah, I'm in.
And, but it's been, you know, and Riff. Adam Rifkin says, this is the worst part of making any movie, the casting. And I guess some of the other movies I've made, I haven't been so intimately involved in the casting. You know, by intimately involved in the casting, I don't mean that the way it sounds.
How did you cast Tim?
We found
in
the
Tim's
true
Vermeer?
Cause.
What's that?
How did you cast Tim in Tim's Vermeer?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. And how we cast the comics and the Aristocrats? It's a whole different.
We
process.
Did do a TV show once where we had to cast people and run auditions, and it was the most unpleasant thing ever. Not because the people coming in weren't good, but because we wanted them to be good, and they weren't what we were looking for.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And it was hard. Casting is really, really tough, and it's really hard to – because you don't want to convince somebody. If they don't think they're right for the part, you don't want to tell them they are. Although you deal with that insecurity. So, you know, Adam wants to argue more with them, and I want to go, oh, you don't want to do it? Great. But they don't, it's not that they don't want to do it. It's that, oh, I don't know if I'm really, it's a really hard part. And I don't mean physically strenuous, and I don't mean emotionally strenuous. I just mean it requires a huge amount of acting chops. So you look at this and go, oh, I gotta do all this. So it's a real challenge. Mm-hmm. So we're going back and forth. We're going down the list, and every single person that we show it to, I have to rewrite the script. Not horribly. Finding replaces part of it, but there's also decisions to be made. So it's about a very short period of time. It's about 2.5 to 3 hours for every person we want to cast. We need to write the script and send it out to them. But so far, I've done that 8 times. So it does add up to an amount of time.
And
just
you 24 become
hours
your
exactly.
Yeah,
you have to basically. Become a stalker.
I have to become a stalker for every person we want to.
That's the fun part.
That's the fun part. That's the fun part. So I'm doing weddings. I'm having a great time with that, and it's going very, very well. But you know, it is really Cephalopod Sunday,
and
time
Sunday.
Keeps on ticking into the future.
Cephalopodcast.
Does that have a long introduction?
Time keeps on slipping. Yeah, very long introduction.
Oh yeah,
like,
good boy. I think that the future is really, really good. But we have, for the first time, this is a big, big,
a big,
big hairy deal. Do squids have hair? Cephalopods have no hair?
They have no hair.
No hair.
Yes is a better answer, given the rules of improv, but I'm going
to
say no.
We're not doing improv now. You're a cephalopod expert.
Oh, that's right.
This is the Sunday Cephalopodcast.
Yeah, there's definitely no improv rules in the Sunday school.
You get told no pretty often.
No hair, Ben.
There's no hair.
No hair.
That's one of the – what makes a cephalopod a cephalopod?
Cephalopod is defined as having all the limbs arranged in a ring around the mouth.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's the definition of cephalopod.
That's how you know it's a cephalopod versus a mollusk, like a snail, which doesn't have its limbs, its limb, its foot around its mouth at all.
Or a rabbit.
A rabbit, which is, oddly enough, not a mollusk at all.
Has hair.
Has hair.
Hair's hair. It does fly above the
lobster. And what other qualities are there besides cephalopod? And what does cephalopod mean? What's the Latin on that mean?
Head foot.
Head foot.
Head foot.
Also like cephalitis.
I'm going with yes.
Sure. And like podiatrist.
Yeah.
And podium, which incidentally pisses me off, because podium has come to mean lectern, and it does not mean lectern, motherfucker. To all the people that work at Southwest and all the other airlines, I don't know why I say Southwest. How about airlines? People that work at airlines, when you say step up to the podium, you do not mean step up to the podium. You mean desk or lectern. But that word's changing, and I have to accept that. I don't want to be an old fogey. Okay, podium can become lectern. I'm okay with that. But keep remembering that pod means originally foot. So the iPod was originally the iFoot.
Yes,
right?
Yes, and a podium is literally a lectern now.
Yes.
Yeah, that's missing because they literally means figuratively
literally
now.
Figuratively, yeah. So cephalopod means
head foot because their legs or their arms or their feet is connected to their head.
And what other what other qualities do they need to have? They need to have how many legs?
Well, that varies greatly. Actually,
oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So you can get something like an octopus, which will have generally eight arms.
Octo,
right? And then you get a nautilus. Which Nato
yeah.
is 90. No, it's not. No. It's not at all. I can only lie for like 10 seconds. This is why I have a good relationship with my wife. But yeah, Nautilus can have a more than 90 tentacles.
Really?
Yeah, what they call tentacles. Tentacles is also a weird thing. A tentacle would be something that has no suckers on it. So
a tentacle has no suckers.
Generally, a tentacle has no suckers, and an arm has suckers.
Huh?
Up to 200 per arm, maybe more.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
It's a lot of suckers.
But isn't the nautilus the shelled thing?
It is.
Yeah.
And it's shelled, but still – so shell has nothing to do with whether you're a cephalopod or not.
No, no. Not at all. And there's variations on the shell in the different cephalopods. So there's the actual shell in the nautilus. And then in the squid, they have what's called the pen or the glatis, which is a kind of a piece of –
popsicle stick.
Cellophane-ish.
It's a popsicle stick inside their body.
That kind of gives it rigidity.
But no backbone, right?
No backbone.
No backbone.
That would be the invertebrate part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But all cephalopods are invertebrates.
Correct.
And whistling, can they whistle?
They, if you squeeze them very hard, they can whistle.
All animals can whistle if you squeeze them very hard.
In the air. I guess you could whistle underwater. Too.
Sure you can.
Sure you can.
I can show you later if
you want. Okay, I would like. There's another weird one. It's called
an you say that the octopus makes do with eight legs?
Makes better than do with eight legs. It's better than do. Some of the octopus actually can walk bipedally.
Oh, yeah. You said that the other day.
Yeah. They use one pair, the back pair of legs, of arms, as legs. And they kind of hold everything up because I know we're on a podcast now, a video on YouTube. Everyone can see what I'm doing. And they kind of – one of them will look like a bunch of algae and kind of walk across the substrate. And it just looks like a clump of algae moving.
Now, how fast can octopuses change color?
Oh, instantly. Faster than thought. No, that's not true. As fast as thought. They were probably faster than thought.
They have to think about it first, you're saying? That's
they don't have to think about it first. Their brains are distributed throughout their arms. And so there seems to be a bunch of subroutines that happen. And things
really?
Just happen. Yeah, if you cut off an octopus's leg.
They're a little stupider.
I'm so screwed.
I thought they had.
They don't have arms. Well, if the back two pair on the ones that walk, uh-huh. cut off their leg, they still can. The arm will still search for food and be moving around and doing things. And there was one study I was reading. No, I work at a public aquarium where we are liking the animals to stay alive. We can't just willy-nilly cut them up.
But they can't survive, though, right? The arm just knows one thing to do, and it does.
Well, it knows several things. Did you see the hand?
There's
the movie The Hand.
Yeah.
Jack Nicholson's first movie, right?
That's a true story.
Yeah.
Right?
The hand goes and it's looking for food.
But that's a movie, right?
No.
This is. But you can learn a lot from movies.
Movies are true. Here's a better one than just moving around or looking for food. There's one that'll like try to put food in its mouth that it doesn't have anymore. But that's not the better one. The better one is, you know, they have the specialized arm. Of course you do.
Okay.
The hectocotylus, which delivers the sperm.
Sure.
Yeah.
I know all about the hectocotylus.
The hectocotylus. That's a good band name, actually, except it's spelled horribly.
Is it?
For a band name.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But hectocotylus is a good
name. It's too much intro.
And that's the arm boner, right?
That's the arm boner.
Yeah.
And on things like the blanket octopus or the argonaut, it looks like the males actually will detach the arm with the sperm in it, and the arm will go and find a female and drop off the sperm.
Motherfucking no.
Yeah, they're
Whoa.
Fucking totally cool. Now, we don't
know. Take that, stamps.com.
Don't wait in any line there.
Yeah. I hate trying to figure out where to deliver my sperm.
What's a good time?
Yeah. Just put it on the scale.
Release the penis.
With the new cephalopod boner arm.
Yeah, we don't know how far away they are when they let go of the boner arm.
Why not?
Looking at the girls.
Aren't you a scientist?
There's so much in cephalopods that we just don't know about. It's, you know, there's a lot of research to be done in a lot of places. Cephalopods is not that money-making, so there's not that much money poured into
the research. You know what you need? Shorter intros.
Shorter intros or a Kickstarter project.
You're still in Hotel California. Yeah, yeah. You've got to get to happy.
Well, I'm going to – the next paper –
makemyarmboner.com and donate.
The next paper I write, there'll just be one copy of it in a box. No peer review.
No peer review. So you don't know how –
Well, we don't know. You find the arm inside of the mantle of the female. And sometimes there's been
why are you looking inside the mantle of a female?
Why wouldn't you look inside the mantle? Looking for a Rolex.
Looking for a Rolex.
So we don't know if the male comes close and then bites the arm off because for whatever reason, or if the arm can actually swim
quite
a ways.
We're getting very close to Coyote Ugly here. It gnaws its arm off.
Gnaws its arm
rather than stay the night.
Well, yeah, if you saw the blanket octopus, you would feel the same way. Oh, the blanket octopus, this is cool. The females,
how big are these things?
The female, I was just
going to
say.
You always have to start with how big they are. Because when people are picturing octopuses, they're picturing like the size of a horse.
They're all the size of a horse.
Okay.
Yeah, it just could be a toy horse or it could be a sculpture of a horse on the freeway.
Those are crazy. Clip of a claw.
That's a
there's a horse underwater.
Pretty good.
All right, I'll see myself out.
The female blanket octopus could be a meter, 2 meters long, and the male...
What size? That's a very small horse.
A very small horse. Well, 2 meters is a pretty decent size.
A small Shetland pony.
Okay. I'll go with Shetland pony.
2 meters
pony.
Is like 6 feet, pony. Right?
So it's a big fucker.
Big fucker.
Yeah.
And the male is teeny, like a couple inches. And I know I'm mixing metrics in there, but... Yeah, the male is really small, and the females are huge.
Like 2 inches to 6 foot?
Yeah.
And they mate? Those two
Well, they bite the arm off.
So it's...
They don't get a room and...
So it's
yeah,
like,
they thought they were different species for a long time.
It's Tom Cruise banging a woman's basketball player. Right?
Yes.
Tom Cruise and
Logan
Lisa Leslie.
Tom and Tom Cruise.
What's
Logan
that?
Tom is a tall volleyball player.
Who is?
Logan Tom. Tom. Logan Tom.
And Tom Cruise is banging Logan
Tom?
Yeah,
Logan Tom, yeah.
Metaphorically, that's what we're saying.
Yes.
I mean, is that common? Is there a comparable species? Well,
insects do that all the time.
Do that. A deep-sea anglerfish will do that, which even more crazy.
The anglerfish is a crazy.
The anglerfish, the male will actually attach itself to the side of the female. And,
I've done that.
And it will grow, the female will grow over the male, and the male will actually end up sharing blood
vessels
with the female.
That happens emotionally to all of us.
That's a juggling team right there.
It grows over?
Yeah, it actually can't be separated, share blood vessels.
Wow.
Yeah. Freaky.
Freaky, freaky.
Animals be freaky.
That's what I wanted with every girl
I was
in love with in college.
That's our new show. Animals be freaky.
Animals be freaky on Discovery.
Anglerfish. Look at that.
What does it mean?
So the anglerfish makes do?
Makes better than do. Because why buy the milk when you can become part of the cow?
Very, very well said. So let's get back. So this little 2-inch, you know.
Male.
Jive-ass male. Cuts off his arm to put into the what do you call the female?
The mantle cavity.
The mantle cavity.
Yeah.
Of a 6 foot female.
Yeah, and sometimes you'll find next time you find a blanket octopus, you can find multiple male arms in the mantle cavity.
What?
Total gangbang. Arm bang.
Wow.
Yeah, they're crazy animals.
Crazy
animals. And
you know that to our listeners, as you know very well, this is really sexy. When you said multiple arms, there you just kind of hear sploosh from all of the listeners.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
What does a blanket octopus look like? Piece of ass?
Looks like an octopus, but it's got this huge blanket, which is why it's called a blanket octopus.
What are you
doing? It unfurls.
It says New York Yankees on it, and they wear it when it's cold.
It unfurls, and it makes it look like this crazy superhero cape thing flying through the water.
What is it? What is it?
It's a skin. It's part of its skin.
And it has, like, free-hanging skin cape?
Yep, between the arms.
Between the arms.
It does unfold. They keep it packed up, and it's presumably it's to thwart people trying or animals trying to eat the blanket octopus.
And what do they eat themselves?
It looks like some of these will actually eat Portuguese man of war. I think I'm getting this right.
Those are badass things.
Yeah, and then they'll use the badass shit to fuck up other animals who are trying to eat it. But I'd want to look that up on my computer, but it's going to get in the shot, so I'm not going to do that. Yeah, you could go to the oatmeal on this, actually.
Like an octopus, pretty fantastic.
Pretty fantastic. And have you seen one live?
I have not seen one live.
Ever. No. They're pretty rare?
They're pretty rare.
Are they wicked deep?
No, they're not wicked deep. Sometimes when the currents are right, you see them in the shallows in Florida in some of the reefs I've dove there, but I've never been there when ones come up.
But if one is chowed down in a Portuguese man of war, are they wicked dangerous?
Yeah, it's Portuguese man of war stuff. You don't want to get stung by that.
I think your penis falls off. You're right. I don't want to get stung by that
at all.
And then, but people pee on you afterwards, right?
Yeah, but that doesn't really. That just makes you feel good emotionally.
Because the ammonia content
is so variable.
I had a girlfriend who was a Victoria's Secret model in the 80s. She was one of the first. And she was on a boat, and she got stung by a jellyfish. And two old guys in the boat whipped out their dicks and peed on her.
That wasn't pee.
And when she called me up afterwards and told me the story, I said, that had nothing to do with you being stung by the jellyfish. And she said, oh, no, they explained it to me. I said, I didn't say they didn't explain it to you. I said it had nothing to do with that. It doesn't really help.
It can help, but the amount of ammonia in the pee is so variable. I mean, if you've got nothing else, go for it.
What you want is as much ammonia as
ammonia
possible.
Ammonia vinegar is better.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Does hot water work for jellies as well?
Is it fresh or salt water you want to use? I think you only want to use salt water.
Right? You're looking for a base.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
you want to trigger Clorox. The nematocysts that haven't been triggered. So the sting is these stinging cells called nematocysts, and they kind of ejaculate poison out. Not poison, toxin. Mm. That's what makes you sting.
Yeah.
And you want to get those all to trigger very quickly, so that's done with.
I see.
No, that's totally wrong. It's totally backwards. If you put fresh water on it, they'll all sting and your life will suck. You want to do salt water and then kind of scrape them off.
You just gave...
I gave the exact opposite answers.
I now just don't believe anything you said the whole time.
I'm an expert, Penn.
Have you been stung by a jellyfish?
I've been stung lightly by a jellyfish. Nothing nasty.
Right.
Nothing nasty.
And you know anyone who's seen a dangerous purple octopus?
No.
No.
Well, I saw some... No, I talked to him online. You know, I saw a picture of it and then got in touch with him because I wanted his pictures. Very, very cool.
But purple octopuses kill you faster than anything?
Purple octopuses?
What is it called? The thing in Australia.
The ringed.
Oh, the blue ring octopuses. Yeah. They're pretty nasty if you get stung. If you get bitten, it's not really a sting. And it looks like it's, you know, it's a
so it's tetrodotoxin. It's venom and not poison?
Yeah. Yep. And that's bad and just shuts you down. So it stops your respiratory and your heart from beating and you look like you're dead. So people shouldn't keep them as pets. But if people really want to keep them as pets, I suggest they put a sign, you know, on the aquarium and in their wallet that says, if you find me laying on the ground near my aquarium, first of all, look for a trail of water and a small octopus walking around. Don't get bitten by it. But please don't think I'm dead. Please do CPR.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can come back from it.
How long can you come back afterwards?
It depends. If they put you, if they inject cold saline into your heart.
Yeah. Well, that's the article we were reading about. They're going to try this new technique with gunshot wounds. Of putting cold saline into your heart and giving you more time for them to work on you before you die, because people who fall in when ice fishing deserve to die. But that's another new issue.
Hours later, their wives pulled them out.
But how long can, after falling into freezing water, you can live?
It's been a pretty long time, yeah. I'm not sure what the longest is, but it's pretty long.
Look at that. Look at that. He's still alive. Look at that.
Put him back in. Put him back in the water. See how long
it lasts. What they're doing, they're replacing your blood with ice cold saline.
And then it goes right from your heart
right
to your brain.
Right from your heart to your brain. And stops your brain alive. Damage.
Keeps your brain suspended in animation.
Suspended animation.
It doesn't keep it alive. Just says, okay, let's think about this for a second.
Give you a couple hours to sew up the wounds, try to fix the problems, and then slowly reintroduce your blood.
Wow. That's pretty
good. Is it your blood? Do they save your blood?
Probably.
Cool.
Yeah. So you finish up, you're like, where did I put all of his blood? I know I just took it out somewhere.
Shit.
I get to, oh, my glasses are on my dad. My glasses are. They're right there. Now where's the blood?
The interesting thing is that they're doing this now without, they don't have time to ask permission. So it's something that's just going to happen to some people. And I think they decided the number was 10. They're just the next 10 people who come in that have these terrible gunshot wounds who they think are probably only a few minutes from death, they'll replace their blood with ice cold saline.
Wow.
Pick them up.
And also give them the new Wu-Tang Clan. I'll listen, put the headphones on. They can listen to that because I'll spring for the $50.
Kind of hard to get volunteers for that study, right?
Yeah, it was tough to get volunteers.
Well,
they offered the option to opt out, but you had to put on a bracelet to wear it so that if you were in the neighborhood where they were near the hospital where they wanted to do this, you could get a bracelet that said, don't fill me with cold saline. Oddly enough, no one signed up.
Okay, smarty pants cephalopod guy.
Yeah.
Tell us some more nutty things.
I want to tell you something nutty that's not cephalopod. Can I do that? It's nutty. You're going to like it.
Is it in the water?
It's in the water. We're doing another exhibition.
We didn't answer yet, but go ahead.
What?
We can hear it. Yeah, we'll hear it.
Oh, okay.
We're still thinking.
I want permission.
Go ahead. You have permission. Go ahead.
We're going on expedition again to the Philippines this year. And one of the things that
we know a guy in the Philippines. He was on our show.
Yeah?
You can stay with him.
You can stay in the log cabin. He's your guy.
Oh, I heard that guy. Yeah. That was pretty cool. We're not going to Cebu. We're going to Analao. Oh,
okay.
You know. Analao.
Not Cebu. The other island in the Philippines.
Cebu is 7,000 islands in one place. We tried to catch one of these before. It's called a bobbit worm. And they call it the common name of bobbit worm after Lorena Bobbitt.
Is it really? Because it cuts off your dick?
It could cut off your dick. And wouldn't that be a good video? That would go viral. It sits in the sand with its jaws open like a bear trap. And as stuff comes over, it shoots up and grabs it and just pulls it down.
Now, once again, is this as big as the one in Tremors?
It is. They might be as long as the ones in Tremors, but not as big in diameter. There's some reports that they could be 10 meters long. Yeah, no, there's some of these Unicid worms get hugely long.
Did you say 10 meters?
That's some report, and I don't know if that's true at all.
The videos we've seen of them are a few meters from the bottom.
Sure.
And still their tail in the sand.
Yeah, you don't know what's in the sand.
And how big around are they?
They can be anywhere from like half an inch to about 2 inches.
This is the shit of nightmares, right?
Yeah, this is the shit of nightmares.
And they live underwater?
Rich has got video of it up.
Oh, no. I'm so scared to watch this.
There it is.
That's
so it's got these five kind of tentacles that sit there and they'll trigger, but you're not seeing the jaws in there.
Five tentacles and giant metal sharpies.
So it's a
Watch this. And it's going to
grab a fish and then pulls it down
like
into
tremors.
The sand.
It's just like tremors.
And what are these things called? Bobbit worms?
Bobbit worms.
And they're called that because of hacking off a dick?
Because if it landed on your dick, it would be like Lorena Bobbitt.
Wow. And then it just goes away. It just goes away.
And
it's exactly tremors. It's
exactly the same. See the jaws on that thing?
Oh, man.
There are the jaws. You got that creepy.
Oh.
So we tried to catch one of them last year.
You want to go near those?
I want to catch them with my hands.
Stop it.
Yeah. We were able to get it kind of tangled in a net that had some fish in it and pull it up. And my friend Matt was able to get his hands on it. And the first time.
Able to?
Yeah.
Desired to as well?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We want to catch one of these. There's not many in collections, and no one's really kept them alive, and we don't really know what's going on with their whole body. I think.
Are you gonna be wearing like a cup?
Naked. Yeah, naked. It's a Steve Irwin school of collecting animals.
It's very much like running the bulls. just crazy guys in the
running the balls, running your balls running past bobbit worms.
I hope that we catch it and I get my hands on it. We're
Would
able
you
to
put
pull
your
it
hands
out.
On this thing?
Absolutely.
Would you go ick at the time?
No, not ick. I'd be going, I hope it doesn't have enough space to bite me and I have to breathe. Although we're thinking of wearing the full face mask so we can communicate, because that might make it easier, and I want to see if we can record that.
Recording
that
is going to be great.
It could be fantastic if it goes wrong.
But this is scuba. How deep down are
these
they?
These are not deep. Probably about 10 meters.
Okay.
Not, or less. Probably 15 feet, really. They're not that deep.
Do they have a history with humans? Have they taken
humans? No, but they're just terrifying looking. Who would want to grab it? And I do.
You.
Yeah, and I hope on its back end it's got like a huge poison sting. So we get it out, and then it just stabs all of us, and we're dead, because that would be really awesome.
This is just, it's just Tremors.
It is just
so
Tremors.
So Tremors, like Kevin Bacon is running away from this thing, and you're trying to grab a hold of it.
Yeah. And Matt, who grabbed it, said it was like it felt like a taut piece of rope. It was just that strong when it was engaged.
That's a scary... Scary animal.
Very cool. So we're going for all kinds of stuff as well, but
tell
I want
me,
this bottom.
No, it's about a half inch around.
Half inch to inch and a half, 2 inches around.
Like
I want to start with the smaller one.
Piece of rope. Well, you're not going to be able to choose which size you pick.
Well, you can see them. So sometimes there'd be four or five of them near each other.
So finding them will not be the problem.
Shouldn't be the problem.
We're not sure they're not all connected underneath the sand.
They could be all one
could
creature.
Be one animal.
Medusa.
There's no chance of that.
There's no chance of
that. Oh, good. Yeah. Stop saying crazy.
Well, I don't want to say no chance, because you always have to leave the door open.
No, shut the fucking door.
That's your other show. Shut the fucking door.
We don't need to leave that particular door open. We don't want to.
So you're going to be underwater.
Yeah.
Say you capture this thing.
Yeah.
Say it's 6 meters long.
Yeah.
What the fuck goes on from there?
There's two of you doing this?
There's going to be...
I get very Philadelphia. Two of us. There's two of you doing this.
Yeah. We need two of us.
That stupid. You need a Philly accent.
It's nice and dry land in your mind. Like you're just speaking with the driest land voice you could speak with.
That's our initial plan is for two. And then, you know, I got another guy wants to film
shit.
It. The Academy. Where are we?
The Academy.
The California Starfleet.
How does that proposal go down?
Well, the guy who coined the term bobbit worm, I think it was in the 80s, is Terry Goslinger, and he's one of our lead researchers. And he really wants us to catch one.
Okay.
It'd be very cool.
You don't know that you're like the sixth pairing that's been there.
That's right.
That's where the movie opens.
Yeah.
What are these pictures on this wall over here? Don't worry about it.
Never mind. Very brave, wonderful, wonderful oceanographers. But what did they do? Oh, they did. Yeah.
Never mind.
Let's get back to
Much
you.
Much like yourself.
We're going to the Philippines. Yay.
So you get this thing.
That's what I'm hoping. We get this
and
thing.
And there's this Hotac stuff that we, whatever that food was. Remember? We had some of it. The guy taught about Potap or Potac. Or,
oh, yeah. The snack down there.
Yeah, there's a snack.
There's a snack in Philippines. You have to eat. Hotep.
Hotep.
Hotep, yeah.
Hotep. Yeah, so I think that's only in Cebu, though, he was saying.
Yeah, I guess so.
Or Cebu.
But maybe you can find yourself some Hotep. It's not that good.
We're going to be diving
It's like elephant. It's kind of stale elephant ears.
How do you get a bobbit worm through TSA? That's what I want to know.
In your pants.
Okay, so you're going to pull this out.
We're going to pull it out, and then we're
it's
not sure
wrap
how
around
long
your
it
neck.
Is. It's going to wrap around our neck. The one that was caught on a lasso, well, a fishing line, and it damaged it. And the story is that they finally got it up, and it went after the guy's face.
Ah!
So I'm going to have a GoPro on a mask here right on top of my head.
What are the chances you get hurt by this thing?
110%.
110%. I don't think it's very high. I think we'll be pretty good because you grab it behind the head and hopefully it won't be able to spin around.
Don't hedge. We want a number. We're going to write this down for when you go on this adventure.
We want a number?
Yeah.
That I get hurt?
Yeah.
And with the broadest definition of hurt?
Yeah.
Yeah, like enough that you were like, fuck!
30%.
That's too high.
But the yelling fuck is, I would say,
90%. Oh, 100%. I think if I get my hands on it, it's going to be yelling fuck. Fuck!
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 Look at that! Look at that!
Look at that! Look at that! Look at that! Fuck! Look at that! Look at that! Look at that! Fuck! Now, it lives in wet dirt?
It lives in what's called muck. So, yeah, wet dirt.
Muck is what you call. Oh, that's your technical.
That's what he's going to be shouting.
Muck!
Muck!
It stands for mucosoid under... No, it's just muck. I have no acronym.
And you think they go down or they go across?
Well, we tried to dig one out, and it just disappeared. So I've got a feeling they don't really have their own den. you know, as such. I think they kind of probably just swim through the sand.
But
they
you've never seen one sweep.
No. And you don't even know the speed at which it would operate that.
No, they're fast, though.
What do you mean they're fast?
They're fast.
Oh, you saw it grab something.
I saw it, but that fast. Neither Matt nor I like anything about this creature. Yeah.
No, that's why I'm on this side of the table with Doug.
You kind of like some about it.
I would be there. I'd be hanging on to one end. Yeah.
Now you would go now and do it?
Yeah.
Hell today. Yeah.
Yeah, go today.
The difference of us, I guess.
Well, you might go to the Philippines. Yeah. And stay on the boat.
Yes.
I would not get on the plane to go to the Philippines.
At this point, I might not even get on the boat. I might just stay at the hotel.
Hotel.
They're good.
With a book.
Hotel, that's cute.
There's good. No,
oh, what, sorry. Shack.
There's no hotel? What do you mean there's no hotel?
There's some kind of resort.
There is a resort.
It's a resort, so we'll see.
But I mean,
as in last resort.
There is.
There's Wi-Fi.
There would be a mini bar with popcorn.
I doubt there would be popcorn. There'd be rice.
Would there be like a little thing you can go to and you can get like a, you want a lemonade and
no,
have some
I'm
cashews?
Just I'm hoping there'll be a fan.
That's all I'm picturing. I'm picturing if there's a bar with a fan.
It's block walls and a fan.
Yeah.
It's block walls
I'm not
walls
in direct sunlight. Like, I just want to be not in direct sunlight.
Yeah, we can arrange that.
Yeah. Then, okay, I'll go.
And only two
but no windows.
Only two easy doors?
No, there's a lot of us going. Windows. And I think for this particular part, which will be happening at night.
Oh, they happen at night?
Yeah, they're easier to get at night.
So you're down there with a flashlight?
Yeah.
On your head, probably?
Someone else will have – the guy videotaping the whole thing will be lighting us up.
We're going to see video of this?
We're hoping.
Can we have first broadcast rights?
I will ask.
Macaulay, are you listening?
To make that deal? Oh, this – you know,
it's
like cool. Keep scratching. And
yeah. You're right. It's all over.
Scuba diving at night – snorkeling at night and scuba diving at night I've done with no danger. Yeah. And it freaks me the fuck out, and
it's
I was done after like 10
scary.
Minutes. Yeah.
You ride a boat like 3 miles from shore, and it's pitch black, and you put on stuff and jump in the water. The first few times, that's a little intimidating.
Yeah.
I've done it. And, yeah. It's what I don't like is that the flashlight goes away.
Yeah.
There's a distance you can't see the flashlight.
Yeah.
And when you read about and talk to Lawrence Krauss about Einstein. The speed of light is only the speed you can get to you, and you know nothing outside of that. I can accept that on a cosmic level. I find it very difficult to accept that on a resort swimming level.
On a local level, it's not fun.
You can't see your own feet unless you keep shining the light up at it.
Yeah.
It's great when you drop one.
Because your feet could have turned into something else.
Yeah. Something could have grabbed your feet.
Your feet could be a cephalopod. They could be a head down there.
It gets even better with somebody with a flashlight and they point it right in your eyes because they want to see your face.
Yeah.
And you're like, no! And then you can't see anything for a little while.
It could be little octopus arms trying to rape me.
And then you will.
Definitely.
Once you get it, what do you have? You must have collection containers.
We do, but this a big long worm that can bite us is a interesting concept to get into a bag of water.
I think this is the diaper genie, right?
Yeah.
The diaper genie is a long, skinny plastic bag.
Yeah. I think we're just going to float a
it
bucket.
It goes hundreds of feet.
It does.
No matter what.
You just grab one in and suck it on in there and twist it off. And
we've sent two oceanographers down below, scuba certified, with a diaper genie.
Diaper genie. The scary part is letting go of the head. If I've got it and its mouth is right there, the letting go of it is the moment that's bad. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Because when you let go of it,
when you let go of a snake, they don't usually jump at you.
Yeah, this is a worm.
Yeah. But it's the same concern. I mean, when you're holding a snake that might bite you, you're going, I can't let him go.
Yeah. They have eyes or something, right?
No.
No.
Then how do they know when to go out and grab you?
They have those feelers.
Right. Yeah. And it's going to be
Don't
let it touch your face.
It's going to be fucking pissed off.
Yeah, it's going to be pissed off.
So hopefully
we can get it.
Probably as mad as any living thing has ever been.
Yeah, so we got about 4 or 5 different ways to try to catch it, but I think just grabbing it's the way to go.
What's the other ways?
I don't remember. We're just going to grab it.
Yeah, well, we had our hands on it last year, and then we were skunked by the weather. We couldn't go back out to get one.
Uh-huh. When you say you had your hands on it, but the weather, you're pulling it out, and this hurricane hit and sucked you out of the water.
You
said hands on it.
I know. I skipped a part of the sentence. We had our hands on it. The first time, Matt Wandell, who's taller than you.
Uh-huh.
He's scary underwater.
And a worm grabber.
He had his hand on it. And this was the first time we were able to do this. And it decided it was done. And pulled out of his hands and went into its burrow and was gone.
And he couldn't.
Well, you see it dragging those fish into the sand.
Yeah, couldn't overpower it.
I think we can now that we know that it's going to jerk hard. We might be able to be prepared for that.
Now, when I was a child, I went night crawling.
Yeah,
you know, and after the rain, I'd go out and grab night crawlers for bait that I could sell. And they were all up over, the worms would come out, and I would grab the night crawler. And I found pulling a 4-inch night crawler out of the ground to be, in a certain way, satisfying, but ultimately unpleasant.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of wrestle. If you pull it too hard, you rip it, and it's really disgusting.
Right.
Have you done night crawler? Yeah. So you're like,
yeah.
Rich just thinks why we're okay with pulling worms.
Have you done night crawling?
Oh, yeah.
Have you?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's going to feel like that, except
really strong,
100 times bigger.
And stronger. We think. So there'll be other people around who help dig it out at that point. My job will be to hold on to it.
You already got that job.
I want that job.
I wish that someone who could watch the YouTube footage of this could put in lightsabers every time you guys both put your hands together to show the worm grabbing.
And won't you put something over its head so it can't attach itself to your face?
Maybe. But there's 10 different ways we can go.
Oh,
but
there was four. Now there's 10.
There's 30. Aren't 400 ways.
Tupperware.
And I may or may not wear the chainmail shark gloves.
My suggestion was that he add the chainmail shark gloves.
Yeah.
Do you worry there's the grip?
No, they're less sensitive.
I think they're for
pussies. It's like wearing a condom. They're for pussies.
You're going to tell the worm it's okay? You've been tested recently?
Yeah, it's cool, baby. It's cool.
What I'm worried about is you got the thing there and you got the head. What are you going to put over the head?
What we're going to do is nothing. The first plan is to have a bucket or floating behind us up at the surface, because that's where it would float, and catch it. And then I'd swim up and put its head in the bucket and then put the rest of it in the bucket.
And it would just jump out of the bucket and bite your face.
Close the bucket.
Oh, close.
Yeah, don't know. Then we're flying blind there because we don't really know what it's going to do.
But then you're going to scream a lot.
Going to scream.
It's in the fucking bucket.
Going to scream. And then that poison sting tail is going to come out and just kill us all. I'm telling you.
What, a vacuum? What if you could vacuum it up?
Or
feed it into the vacuum, I guess.
Yeah, we don't want to damage it. So
I'm not sure it has the same concern for you.
Badly,
no, it absolutely doesn't have the same. Any animals we collect do not have a concern for us at all. They don't want us to collect them at all.
Finding Nemo.
Oh, Rich,
that's based on a true story.
You will have Wi-Fi.
Yes.
At the hotel.
Yes.
When are you doing this?
I leave on the 29th.
Okay.
Oh, soon. This is soon.
Yeah, this is coming out.
Will you be there on a Sunday?
I'm not sure.
Because we could have you on.
That
Penn
would be
Sunday
fun.
School.
I will have to talk to the powers that be at work.
They will locate it. I've got an in.
Okay.
I know this guy, Rich Rosser.
I'll let him know.
Okay. I'll be able to get through that. We were very, very happy with – what was the first guy's name?
Jay Frank.
Jay Frank. I like Jay Frank.
Yeah, interesting stuff, right?
Yeah, interesting stuff.
Didson.
The future is good.
Yeah. Jay Frank. And go to what's the name of his website?
Digson.com.
Digson.com. Go there.
Oh.
Go to PennSundaySchool.com. Rich, you got something to say?
Can I pimp myself?
Sure.
I've never done that. I write about all this kind of stuff, and you can see all that kind of stuff at richross.org. How do you like that for branding?
Richross.org.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, you have the advantage of having a name that doesn't need to be spelled.
Yes.
Everybody can spell Rich Ross, can't they?
Yeah. And it only took me 20 years to get that domain.
Yeah.
How stupid is that?
RichRoss.org. Want to thank the lovely and talented Michael Godeau. Very, very exciting moment for people who listen to the old Penn Radio on CBS. Happy Jack, our producer, our boss, is in the house. He's in the other room. He's moved out of Vegas and everything, but he's here. Happy Jack is here. Very happy to see him. Sitting right there with Jarrah Strong. Want to thank Ready Rich, the lovely and talented Matt Donnelly. Want to thank Adam Carolla, our big, 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 big boss. Want to thank Peter Golden and Glenn Ally. And go to PennSundaySchool.com. Everything will be there, including the video of me screaming about the angels in the Luxor light. Did you sin, as I said? I covered everything, didn't I?
Yeah.
Okay, that was Penn Sunday School.
Yeah, thank Rich.
Oh, Rich Ross. Yeah, he's right there.
And to our listening ears, all nature sang.
Here's the Penn Sunday School pop quiz. What does cephalopod mean? Another Penn Sunday School pop quiz. Will music in the future be better or worse than music in the 70s? I was so much older then. I'm younger than that now. You know I love you.
And I'm sorry, I released my arm boner in your backyard.
It's chasing my children.
It started to even look like a triple rainbow.
This is Corolla Digital.